Okay, so I was at a friend's going away this past weekend, which friends going away is like such an interesting like experience of emotion sometimes. And this is not the takeaway, but I just want to throw this in. I'm just like, it's like exciting sometimes and selfishly when people are going away who are your homies, you'll miss them. But it feels really great to go to a going away where like you know you're gonna miss the person, but you really think the move is the right thing for them.
100%. It is a complicated mix of emotions.
100%. And this was, I have good feelings for this friend. I'm very excited
Good.
for her.
Yeah.
So that's lovely. But at the bar, I was like having a chit chat with a friend of mine, and he kind of out of nowhere, and you wouldn't have guessed this about this person, was like, you know what? What if I just like wanted to be a spy? What if I was just like gonna like
Oh.
try and be in the CIA? And I was like,
What's the
what if you
career path
were?
to that?
I mean, what is the career path for this truly? And so we were kind of spitballing about this, and I was like, well, I was like, what? I mean, he was like, well, I'll tell you if I do. And I was like, could you even tell me? He goes, what if I am now?
Oh
And I was
my
like, what if
God.
you are in the CIA now and you're like trying to tell me, but like not really telling me in a like a jokey way? And then he was like, well, if I had to like fake disappear, he was like, I would give you a sign. I would let you know I wouldn't leave you hanging. And I was like, it would be really important to me that you didn't.
Yeah.
And so he was like, okay, this is the code word. And I can't tell you what it is.
No,
But
you
we were like,
cannot.
okay,
But
if
you
either
have
one of
one.
us, so we came up with a code word that either one of us would use if we had to like fake our own disappearance or death or like had to vanish without notice. We have a code word for each other.
That's great.
And
Then you don't
so,
worry endlessly about the other.
no, it felt really good. And then I was like, oh, and I was like, you know, I was like, I don't think I've ever had like a code word or like a safety like word with somebody like this ever. And he was like, I haven't either. And then we were like, oh. And then I was like, wait. And I was like, can we have one in real life though, in case there's an emergency? I was like,
Yeah.
you rank very highly. Like, he's somebody who is in my like
You would
inner
call,
sanctum.
yeah.
And is somebody who, like, I truly think w I would call in a time of crisis. Like, I know that I could. He's in, like, you know, if it were something that, you know, I said to him, it was funny. I was like, you know, if it were an emergency, but like it wasn't like the immediate, like it was the need, like the need wasn't like immediate. Like, I was like, you know, you reach out to family, even if they're like not geographically like right there. And he was like, Austin, when it's an emergency though, it's usually pretty time
That's
sensitive.
true. Someone like has you kidnapped and you're making a phone call where you have to have a code word. It is time sensitive for sure.
Well, exactly. And I was like, you know, this is important. And I think sometimes as like a single person who lives in a city where I don't have any family, like really, I oftentimes feel like, oh my God, if something were terribly wrong, like who would I call and would anyone take me seriously? And I said to him, I was like, you know, sometimes I really worry that if something really terrible happened, like late, and I called somebody, like in a 911 situation, they like wouldn't answer or screen my call because they assumed I was drunk or something. And
Oh.
I don't have a reputation for that, but I just kind of think, unfortunately, like a lot of people just think that about single friends who call them late at night. They're like, that person's drunk. And I'm like, what if it
Yeah.
was a crisis? And
Right.
so we were like, we have to, like, we're like, let's have a safety word. He goes, yeah. He's like, what if you're on a date that all of a sudden is like not okay and you need like
Yeah.
someone to like interrupt? And I was like, this is very important. So we have a safety word now too, that's like our 911, and then we have a different one for faking abductions. And
Oh.
I felt like very like
I need to
strongly
make
about
these.
this.
Yeah, I need to
I
make these.
know, I want us to have a safety word with each other, like this is important. But do you have any code words with people? Is this anything you've ever done before?
My grandma once told me when we were swimming in the pool at our hotel at Disney World.
God love the like exposition on this one.
Well, we were like playing like the color game where you like dunk someone underwater until they like guess the color that you're thinking of.
Oh yeah, just those like fun pool games where you fake drown someone under
Yeah,
pressure.
yeah. And
Big fan.
she kept saying poiple instead of purple. And then after like both of us laughing for a long time, she said, "Jamie, if we get to heaven and we have completely different bodies and we can't recognize each other, but you think it's
Oh.
me, just say poiple and I'll know."
Oh.
So that's
Oh.
the only one I have, but I want some like 911 style code words.
you should set up some safety words. Like, yeah. I think it's important. I liked that he was like, I would give you a sign. And then he whispered in my ear, he's like, this is the code word. And it was like, it was a code word that I really liked. Mm-hmm. And then when I was trying to, it was funny because this is just this friendship with this person. I was like, we need to have a real one for emergencies. And he was like, we should. And then, you know, got to this. And then I looked at him and I went, I keep thinking of a bunch of foods, which I know because of us and we cook together so often. I was like, he goes, I also keep thinking of foods and I know it can't be a food.
It has to be like an animal or like a, I don't know, an object you would never have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to tell you where we landed on any of that, but because that would make it not a secret safety emergency word. But it's also, I also think criterion you should consider is if you were trying to either say this or you're putting it in a text as like a 911. If your texting got cut off, you would maybe want it to be a unique enough word that if like the front end of it was seen, it would register.
You're right. That's a very, very clever point.
Listen, hot takes, hot criterion for code words. I'm just encouraging people to set up code words. One, because I think it's very important if you actually had an emergency. I love how I'm an advocate for this and I've had a code word with someone for an emergency for 4 days. But
you're on fire for it, like a new Christian.
I'm on fire for it in some way. And I'll say this. It does, even if you don't need it, feel kind of fun to have a sneaky word with somebody. Like, it's fun to have a secret with someone.
Of course it is. And it feels, like, safe and, I don't know, I like it.
I don't know. Off air, we'll have to come up with our own sneaky peek words. We will. You know? Listen, so this is me encouraging all of you to come up with words if you have to fake your own disappearance and if you just, like, actually need help.
Yeah, because you have this platform to do that.
You and have so, this platform. On that also, note. Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This? On welcome. That note. Welcome.
We can't afford to be third wave about that, so whatever.
Jamie is like ready to do just like late night phone sex ads, and honestly, like, here for it.
That's good. You gaslight the teacher. Okay.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it. I'm like, who's that guy?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
This is what I want because I assume these people get to have deep chats all the time together because they go to youth group. And I was like, I just want someone to talk to me. And I was just like...
Anal insertions aside.
I do believe in fairies. I do. Oh, welcome to Why Are You Like This, the weekly podcast where we dissect code words, other parts of our culture, some kind of phenomenon that we're into or interested in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That's Jamie Ryan, ready to shout out Poiple in the afterlife in Cincinnati.
And that's Austin Williams in Chicago. That was a beautiful intro. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Welcome to the
all.
Program. Okay.
I love thinking of this as a program, but I say program.
Program.
So on tonight's program.
Yeah. Tell us about the program tonight.
We'll be talking about, and these are hard words, but parasocial interaction and parasocial relationships. And whoa. Also erotomania. Those aren't that hard, I guess. They're just big.
I mean... Erotomania. Is this sex episode light? Is this sexy? Is this not sexy?
It's like honestly, tell the listeners. It's like honestly not sexy despite erato being involved in the title.
I feel fine about that. Listen, don't
get
your hopes up. It's
more just delusions.
But sometimes life is interesting without the sex. So here we go.
There could be sex in the background. There's maybe some implied sex going on.
You could be masturbating while you're listening to this episode, and then it's certainly a sex episode.
I mean, there's always that possibility, I guess.
It's always an option. If there's not enough sex for you in the episode, that's always an option.
Oh, my God. Okay, so...
Break it down. You threw down some big words. Tell me what the hell this shit means.
I did indeed. So we're going to start off with parasocial interaction. And that, I'll just go ahead and give you the Wikipedia definition, if that's cool, since that's like...
Favorite place to find a definition, to be honest. It's more edited than Webster's.
A great source, yeah. So according to Wikipedia, parasocial interaction is a term coined by Donald Horton and Richard Wall in 1956 to refer to a kind of psychological relationship experienced by an audience in their mediated encounters with performers in the mass media, particularly on television. Viewers or listeners would come to consider media personalities as friends, despite having limited interactions with them.
The immediate things that come to mind when you say this are the way that certain celebrity couples get, like, labeled as, like, couple goals, and everybody's like, oh, I'm just obsessed with their relationship. Like, you really know what it's like.
Absolutely. I also think you about really know people, what it's like.
Right. Or I think about people who are universally hated, or,
oh, yeah,
like, that's a whole tough thing. Or I think about people, like, you know, when Charlie Sheen went off the deep end and everybody had an opinion, like, they actually knew what was going on, although that did seem crazy. Like,
that was crazy, but yeah.
But then they're like, you know, they're the women who get, you know, labeled America's sweethearts because everybody's in love with them or whatever. And, like, we don't really know them.
Yeah,
so,
or, like, Jennifer Lawrence is a great example of someone who are, like, people look at her and they're like, oh, like, we would be friends. Like,
the girl next door. She's so down to earth and funny. Sure.
Right. Because you're seeing this, like, hyper curated version of someone that is their public persona, and they're not ever reacting to you. So you're just constantly seeing them perform. But before we get into all the specifics of it, I wanted to mention, just to lay some kind of understanding at the beginning, that this can happen to all of us. We all experience parasocial interaction, even with each other. Like, on Instagram, if I'm interacting with you, Austin, like, if you post something as a story, and
As I often do, if you follow me on the internet, I'm a frequent storier. And if you want to be a part of that, you're welcome to join me anytime at also Will. Anyway,
that is something that you, one person who created that story, put out for an audience. It doesn't just go to me, but I experience
that's true.
It alone. I watch your story like you've only sent it to me. Or if it's like of your face, I see like your face for me. And it's different because we're friends. You're not like a celebrity who I can't contact, but like,
right.
If I react,
or like, I'll answer your DM or your text in regards to what I posted, 'cause I know you.
Exactly. And so that is reciprocal, but there is still the parasocial experience of me as an audience member for your content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense because while it may feel like you're personally receiving it or experiencing it, it's not just for you and it's happening out there in whatever abyss or, you know, void that it's been shouted into.
Exactly. Exactly. This is like when you saw Childish Gambino and your friend was like, he's singing to me. And
well, he was actually speaking and he was like, if this is for you, like, if you ever feel like it was like some kind of way. And she was like, I feel like he's speaking directly to me. And I was like, based on how you feel moved, he is speaking directly to you. Let's just remember that.
But that's what it is. It's like relating to or admiring or having like a romantic or sexual attraction to someone who is speaking to a large audience, whether it's like on stage or on television or on social media, but you experience it as like a personal interaction with them.
Oh, I like this because you know what? There's actually, well, like you can definitely swing negatively on this. It's making me think,
it's not
because
all negative at all.
Donald Glover and the Childish Gambino fame, that it makes me think about other people I know who've like kind of thrown stuff to a bunch of people, but if it affects somebody, it makes me think of really positive versions of this, like the It Gets Better campaign.
Yes.
How that
yes.
can feel like you're being spoken directly to, but it is going out to a bunch of people and whoever's put it out doesn't know exactly who it's going to resonate with, but I think they hope it resonates with somebody. Or like when Busy Phillips, when her talk show was on the air, she ended every episode with like telling the audience or like the viewers like at home and whoever that she loved them. And I heard her in an interview just saying, you know, I just think it's really important that like everybody hears that before they go to bed. And like if nobody hears it like from somebody else in their life, they'll hear it from me. And I'm like, oh, like this is a positive mindset behind that.
Absolutely. And I was reading through accounts of people who like broke a leg or had a chronic illness where they had to be off work and inside for a long time. And they said that watching the Ellen show.
I was going to say Ellen DeGeneres makes a lot of people feel this way. Like I was thinking this while you started telling the story and I was like, oh, I should bring up Ellen. I love this. Keep going.
So these people who were trapped in their homes because of an injury were like feeling low. They were feeling isolated. They didn't have a lot of people around them. They're just at home. and a huge like brightener in their day that they looked forward to, that's like not a phrase but whatever, was watching Ellen and watching Oprah. And they said specifically that they felt like that Ellen and Oprah were talking to them, like they felt comforted by the the show and the hosts like saying nice things. And
both of them are national treasures, so let's just note that, okay?
National treasure. What a dumb franchise, but that's enough about that.
No, don't let Nicolas Cage ruin my sentiments about Ellen and Oprah, okay?
They're great. And there's a lot of great things about parasocial interaction and parasocial relationships like that. Like when, I don't know, there is a current astronaut whose name escapes me, who was inspired by Star Trek to become an astronaut because she saw Uhura, the female, like, captain on Star Trek, and she was like, oh, I, like, she looks like me, she reminds me of myself, I identify with this character, and now she is an astronaut, and she...
That's kind of badass,
Yeah, so that kind of parasocial interaction can be great. But I want to talk about my personal experience with it.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm interested in this.
So I didn't ever have like a giant, like crazy, like celebrity crush when I was younger. And I think like some of that I can attribute to like maybe when our peers had like posters of like Josh Hartnett in their lockers, which shout out, we're old, but that's okay.
God, we are the Josh Hartnett generation from the time period. Yeah, ooh, we're old. Okay.
Yeah. I just, like, because I deep down was gay and, like, didn't understand that in middle school, I, like, never...
You didn't identify with it.
Yeah, so I was just, like...
The propaganda of, like, centerfolds of shirtless men in an Abercrombie and Fitch way didn't resonate with you.
It just wasn't, like, it was just there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really, I feel like, have a chance to, like, develop that, like... insane like parasocial crush, like desired relationship that maybe some of our peers could at that age.
Okay, yeah, this makes sense, sure.
But one night in college I couldn't sleep and I turned on the TV, and we had, this is a brief time in my life when we had cable.
Oh my god,
just very briefly did I ever have cable. But there was on Oxygen, which is a channel that I love deeply.
Okay, keep going. I love this story. I don't know where it's going, and I love it so much.
I'm actually, like, so red right now because I've never told anyone this, and it's
guys, really we're going to be honest. We're going to embarrass the shit out of ourselves this episode, so stay tuned if you're into that kind of thing. Keep going. I love this story. Shout out Oxygen.
And there was a Bad Girls Club marathon on, and you
are Bad Girls Club, like, number one fan. Like, you're the only person who knows this much about Bad Girls Club.
I had never seen the show before, and I watched it all night and fucking loved it. But there was one specific personality character. I don't know what you call the people on that show.
A cast member, perhaps?
A cast member, thank you. There was one cast member who was a lesbian that was just beautiful, and I just thought she was really funny and great, and I was, like, kind of barely starting to, like, come out to myself, but, like, not talking to anyone about it yet. And I just remember, like finding her on Facebook and, like, friending her back when you could do that. And, like, looking up, like, everything she had done, like, prior to that, like, terrible YouTubes, like, just, like, doing a real, like, internet deep dive on this cast member of Bad Girls Club, because this is, like, the only exposure that I have to, like, someone who's a lesbian who's, like, close to my age and, like, I don't know, but...
It felt right, it felt good, and you were like, I want to know everything about you that I can find on the internet and watch all the interviews. I do this about people.
Yes, and then just, like, frantically clearing my internet history, but...
like somebody was going to be bothered.
I know. And then, like, from following her on Twitter, like, over the next couple of weeks, figured out that she was no longer in a relationship, and what bar she was working at in St. Louis. And so in my head, I'm like, I should just go there. I should just go and sit at the bar and just see what happens.
Just and take it in.
I bet she would like me and it would go great. And then like very quickly, I was like, what the fuck? But that was a parasocial relationship that I had in my head that I thought could work.
Oh, I like this story.
It is very embarrassing. But
I feel like everybody's felt this way though, and it is like embarrassing to articulate, but like, I don't know. Like, I think everybody's been like, oh, if this celebrity and I met, we would be friends.
Yes.
Like, they'd like me.
That's what this phenomenon is us thinking that we know people and that they would like us. But then, like, if I showed up at that bar and, like, started talking to her, she would think I was crazy. And I would be crazy for doing that.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you handle the situation.
This is true. If I would have, I think, kept my cards really close to the chest. Now I'm talking about this like it's something I was ever going to do, which I wasn't. But
you maybe for a moment were open to doing it.
I was open to it. St. Louis is only 5 hours from Cincinnati, and I had already driven there and back in one night, one time, unrelated, fully unrelated.
Related, because you really played it out for a minute of just like, what if, like. I love it.
Also, in prep for this episode, and I'm not going to say too much about this because I don't want to embarrass her, but on the note of lesbians who are just barely coming out to themselves having these parasocial relationships.
Which also, I think there's a lot to be said there for visibility. Like, that's real. Like, if you don't, like, have, like, friends who look like you or act like you or believe in the same things you do or of the same orientation as you are, and then you see someone in the public eye who you feel like you're like, oh, they get it, or we share this thing that I don't share with other people in my immediate life.
Mm-hmm.
No shit, you're drawn to them. Like, duh.
Yeah, of course, of course. So when she was figuring out that she was gay, my girlfriend, when she was probably too old to watch all of these, watched like every Emma Roberts like TV show, interview, movie, like every single thing. And she
I'm
was like,
fine with that. I love Emma Roberts.
Yeah, she's great.
Like, strong choice.
But it was interesting. We were talking about it and she was like, yeah, I can't believe like I didn't know that I was gay. I was just like thinking I was straight and was like up to date like by the second on anything that happened to Emma Roberts. And I was like, yeah, that's probably a sign.
Oh my god, I don't know though. I don't think it always is. I think you can be like kind of, my mom, there is like a celebrity that exists, I won't put her on blast for anything, but it's a strong choice, who my mom like always knows what they're doing, like during certain periods of time, and at one point referred to this woman as her third daughter, which I thought was hilarious. And my dad looked at my mom and was like, no.
That's incredible.
It was one of my favorite moments. And I was like, you just love her
coming
in a maternal way.
Hilarious.
It's cute though. It's real. My mom just loves her.
It's very cute. It's very cute. Mm-hmm. But so do you have any instances of maybe, I don't know, feeling a special connection with a celebrity or someone from the internet or perhaps even reaching out to them?
Listen, what a pointed, loaded question. So, I will say that, like, I don't know that I felt like this. I don't know. On some level, I've been, like, Emma Roberts, like, level obsessed with people, or, like, this chick from Bad Girls Club, where I have, like, been up all night and like watched everything they've done, or like I can't stop watching interviews that somebody's done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a true Gemini though. I get like very fixated and it's like very brief. But I know that what you're specifically referring to, and I don't know that I just feel like I identify with this person who's been very vocal about struggling with depression and like,
yep,
also like is with
strong
someone who like definitely used to have like a drug and alcohol problem, which I'm not trying to say I've dated that, but like you never know. And all that said, what you may be prompting me for, which like does make me feel like I'm like gonna sweat, is the time that when I was very intoxicated that I DM'd Kristen Bell
just to tell her
how much I loved her. And in a full embarrassing, like, I feel like I'm lightly sweating right now, I'm going to read you what I DM'd her.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm so ready.
I DM'd Kristen Bell on September 10th, 2017, I think I don't have, I can't see the timestamp on this, I don't think, but it was, I think it was in the wee hours, and I can tell you I was very drunk. And then the next morning I was like, did I DM Kristen Bell last night? And then I was like, sure enough, I did. Let me sacrifice my dignity and read to you. This may be lost in an abyss of messages, but on the off chance, you seem absolutely lovely. Love all your work. And presently, the good place always makes me laugh. Rooting for you and Dax always. All good things to you and your family. Heart emoji.
That's nice.
If anything, I just like this wrote like basically nice. Like a thank you letter that you would send like an aunt to Kristen Bell Instagram DMs.
You did send her an aunt letter.
I was just like, I want you to know I really like your work. I'm really enjoying the show you're on right now. Just really root for you and your husband's relationship. And I hope that your family's doing well. Like, and I like truly am like I'm sweating right now and like almost feel like emotional. Not because I'm emotional about the message, but because I'm so embarrassed that I did that.
No, it's not that bad. If you like, you could have said far more embarrassing things. You just said some kind words and then
It was one of those moments of like drunkenness too that I want to say that I was like, wow, like I feel emotional and like it's important for me to tell this person I care about them, which is like such a drunk white girl move. But then on the flip side, I was like, I really have to, if I'm going to do this, I really have to collect myself. So then I wrote something like very proper with no typos that I'm sure I like read with like using one eye at like 2 in the morning. But you know what? I feel fine about it. And the next day I was like, well, if you're going to, you know, send somebody a drunk DM that they'll never read, that was a strong move, Austin Williams.
It is. It was nice. That's good.
Thank you so much. I once DM'd Kristen Bell.
And thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm very happy that you did, because I think that my parasocial interactions, my girlfriend's parasocial interactions, and yours with Kristen Bell all highlight different ways that we can form those parasocial relationships. So, like, yours was primarily, like, a platonic sort of just admiration.
Maybe. It was just like, I identify with parts of your life that you've talked about, and I really like you, and I want you to be successful, let me tell you.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and you identify with her, and you want good things for her. Mine was more romantic skewed with also some identification features.
Love it.
And my girlfriend's was just purely a romantic pipe dream, but that is fine.
I've also certainly had like romantic pipe dreams about people and have like watched every interview and then been like, how do I find more content?
How do I find
I'm not going to tell I'm you which Degrassi cast members these were at different times in my life, but just know that that certainly played a role.
Oh my God. I didn't not do that too.
Yeah, you love Cassie Steele.
Stop. Anyway. You don't have to say it. Okay. Pressing on with a little bit of the history and the soft, soft science of this.
Okay, so, love it.
In 1956, as I said, the initial work on this topic was done by Horton and Wall, and they had a little bit of a different summary about parasocial interactions, and they thought it was pretty negative in a way that later research has kind of debunked. So I want to read you a little excerpt.
I love an excerpt.
It is admittedly from an Atlas Obscura article titled, How Our Make-Believe Relationships with Celebrities Shape Our Social Lives. It's a 2016 article by Lauren Young. Thank you, Lauren.
Shout out, Lauren. Welcome to the program.
So it says, for decades, many people endorsed Horton and Wall's 1956 conclusion about the phenomenon that those who formed parasocial relationships were lonelier and had low self-esteem. Several studies in the 1980s attempted to link this loneliness to parasocial relationships, but the connection couldn't be made. Conversely, the research from the University of Delaware discovered those people who seek more relationships in real life are more likely to form parasocial relationships as well.
I feel like that's me. Like, I feel like I don't disagree with what they're saying. I feel like I'm somebody who actually can totally get tunnel vision and be obsessed with consuming stuff about any specific person for like a couple weeks, and I feel like I roll through those stages frequently, but I also think I'm like that in real life, and that I have a like a broad and vast friend group in a cool way that I really like mm-hmm. seeking out relationships in person, but then also can be like obsessed with a celebrity. Now that said, I don't know if I think that I seek it out because I'm lonely, but I do think times that I'll like go through like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with this person after seeing them in a movie or something mm-hmm. can also be like part of time spent by myself, or like if you're sick,
it's a little isolating.
Watch maybe. A whole series or a season of Bad Girls Club. Like it's like you're
I wasn't
doing
sick.
This. Well, whatever it is. But you know what I mean? Like sometimes like if you like are couch ridden or you just like, oh, I'm going to like kick it for a minute or I'm going to have this night. That's when you can go into the tunnel. And like it's a solo activity to like deep dive on someone on the internet.
It is absolutely, absolutely a solo activity.
Totally. So like I don't know if I want to say it like breeds loneliness, but I'm like it's something you do by yourself predominantly.
It is very solitary. And especially since this is the only kind of interaction really that you have where you expect to not get a response.
Yes. Well, most people, I think, like because
in average interactions.
Yeah, there are some tougher things that I feel like maybe you'll touch on.
Sure. And to touch on what you said earlier about maybe parasocial stuff, like not being negative and maybe even being positive, the article that I read went on to say that in a 2008 study, they concluded that people with low self-esteem can actually benefit from parasocial relationships. They said thinking about a favorite celebrity allows low self-esteem people to become more like who they would ideally like to be. They also provide those people.
I think that's real.
Yeah,
I think
I
that's
do
kind
too.
Of nice, actually.
It says they also provide those people with safe and reliable relationships, unless, of course, your favorite character dies or the TV show ends. But if you're not relying on
it completely.
I
hate it when people you become obsessed with get written out of a series. It's like
it's terrible. It's truly terrible. Game of Thrones
Derek
is just
Morgan on Criminal Minds. I'm
Russian
looking at
roulette.
You anyway.
Oh, yeah. Also, all the lesbian characters get killed off all the time on every show. Buffy, I'm looking at you, even though you're iconic for all of us.
Okay.
That was rude. Right. Anyway, enough about that. Yeah. So, parasocial interaction, we do it all the time with each other, with celebrities. It's just like how the world is now.
Yeah.
And it's,
but it's about social media fuels. You like you really do have the opportunity to have like a celebrity speaking directly into a camera that you're consuming in a way that feels like it's for you.
Absolutely. And actually, quick side note about how YouTube is really like the biggest place where that happens.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot
the
of
YouTube
people,
celebrities.
Yeah. And a lot of people watch YouTube like more at times when they feel alone. This is purely anecdotal information from people that I know. But like when like the mukbang thing was trending, it was that's like
what is mukbang?
It's very dumb, but it's basically like a YouTuber who has a following goes okay. like through a drive-thru and gets a meal and then just eats it on camera and talks to you. And the idea is like you can eat with them or like just have it on and feel like less alone, like someone came over and is just like smashing McDonald's at your house.
Oh, I feel like I do this in a different way that as a single person who when they cook dinner, I'm usually just cooking for myself,
mm-hmm.
which oftentimes cooking dinner and then eating dinner alone is like feels like more of a chore and like not as fun or nice
yeah.
or whatever. But I a lot of times will Instagram story like what I'm cooking or my recipes
oh.
and then people will ask for the recipes or like tell me what they're having for dinner and whatever. And then it like my meal kind of becomes social. So that's part of the reason I
Whoa.
Like gram so much when I cook because
like
then
reverse,
it becomes this thing.
You've like reverse engineered parasocial interaction.
It's super fun when people, and like sometimes all of people be like, oh my God, is this the recipe from this? They're like, I read it, I saw it, like, is it good? Or like, I tried this or whatever. It's very fun.
Whoa.
I love cooking on the internet. It's super fun to do with people
it
if you're into that kind
fun.
Of thing.
I'm not super into cooking, but I would like to care more. But we'll see. We'll see about that. So moving on to perhaps the darker side of this phenomenon. I want to now include erotomania in the conversation.
Yeah, so this I'm going to guess. Can I make a wild guess at what it is and tell me how red I am?
Yeah. Keep in mind it's related to what we're talking about.
I feel like this is like fantasizing about like a romance specifically and or sex with a person that you don't have.
Yes.
Like in your life.
Correct. Right? It doesn't actually have to be a celebrity. It can be like the mailman or like an acquaintance.
Oh, just somebody you don't know interpersonally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Someone that you don't have a relationship with. Who you in your head have an elaborate relationship with.
Totally.
So just to get us some ground laid here, I'd like to again visit Wikipedia.
Okay.
Wikipedia says, erotomania is listed in the DSM-5, shout out DSM, as a subtype of a delusional disorder. It is a relatively uncommon paranoid condition that is characterized by an individual's delusions of another person being infatuated with them. This disorder is most often seen, though not exclusively, and get ready for, we gotta let go of gender politics for a second just so I can read this.
We do, and we also, like, anytime have to acknowledge there's more than one Law & Order SVU episode about this.
Yes, there is.
There's a great one involving a newscaster where John Munch, like, really has this chick's back because there's somebody watching the news who, like, everything that she does, he goes, oh, she was talking to me. But, no. Like, she's not. She's a news anchor.
Yeah. So. Yes, that is... Okay, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. This disorder is most often seen, though not exclusively, in female patients that are shy, dependent, and sexually inexperienced. The object of delusion is typically a male who is unattainable due to high social or financial status, marriage, or general disinterest. The object of obsession may also be imaginary, deceased, or someone the patient has never met.
I think both, like, I trust you on what you're saying statistically, but I do think, like, we probably
that's what Wikipedia says. But I think women are crazy stuff, but...
Well, I think it could go both ways, but what I want to hearken to is the archetype of someone being, like, kind of like a hero or, like, the knight in shining armor. And I think, like, whether that person is a man or a woman who saves you from something, like, literally medically or, you know, like, puts their arm out and prevents you from being hit by, like, a, you know, reckless driver or something, even if you don't really know that person, people can oftentimes quickly have, like, intense emotional feelings towards someone who prevents something bad from happening to them or, like, quote-unquote saves their life in a way that they can fall in love with them. And I think that doesn't necessarily, like, no man nor woman, like, in terms of who, but I think people certainly feel that way.
Yes, I think they certainly do. And the definition goes on to say that delusions of reference are common. And I didn't know what that was.
I was going to ask, what does that mean?
Yeah. It's like when you think that you are receiving secret signs. So, like, delusions of, like, the references of, like, why that person would be in love with you. So
this is the newscaster SVU episode that he goes, she's, like, say, like, she did this and it was directed at me, or she's talking to me about whatever
color because she knew that, like, my grandmother, like, did this or what, like, just things that are maybe, like, esoteric signs, like, from that person and the universe. They're communicating with you telepathically.
I didn't think I could make this relate, but it could be, like, if you're like, oh, like, they say, when they say this, it's a code word for me. Yes,
absolutely. You could absolutely do that.
For the record, my code words aren't fake. They were consensual anyway.
They were. A really common delusion of reference is thinking that license plates are communicating something from your love.
Oh, wow. That is not a thing I thought oddly people would specific. Frequently think.
Yeah.
Oddly specific about a thing that I know. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, but I guess license plates are kind of like esoterically tempting, I would say, as someone who considers themselves a numerologist. I spend a lot of time looking at the numbers on license plates and signage and trains and things like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you do always clock them when they're good and point them out to me, and I appreciate you for that. Thank you for pointing out every 27 that's ever appeared when we've been together.
And I'll always do that. So yeah. So how does erotomania fit into this? The reason that I wanted to touch on Erotomania was I felt like I couldn't give any like good examples of parasocial interactions kind of gone wrong without without talking also about erotomania, because I feel like all of the examples have are kind of like both of those things together. And there's going to be a lot of mental illness in these examples. So before I talk about them, I do just want to briefly mention that there are two forms of erotomania. There's primary and secondary. In primary erotomania, it's also called old maid's insanity. It exists.
Well, that feels oddly unfortunate and weird and shitty towards women, but carry on.
And it's called, and this is going to be a hard French word for me to say, it's named after like the psychiatrist who like did a case study on it, but De Clairembeau's syndrome. And
loved
one of
it. Strong effort.
One of his patients suffered from this, but primary erotomania exists alone without any comorbidities. So it has a sudden onset and a chronic outcome, meaning it kind of starts out of the blue and doesn't go away, and you don't have any other psychotic features. Like, you're not also experiencing, or even any mental illness. Like, you're not depressed, you're not schizophrenic, there's nothing else going on.
Interesting.
Secondary.
It almost makes it like more dangerous because it's like less expected.
What? It's a true, true wild card. There's no like, there's no warning.
There are no warning signs. Yes.
So secondary erotomania is more understandable. It's usually comorbid with other issues, including but not limited to schizophrenia, delusions of persecution, grandiose ideas, and for this person who has secondary erotomania, the obsession develops gradually. It's not out of nowhere, and it's influenced by their other mental illness.
Interesting. Okay.
Problematic behaviors include, but are not limited to, calling, sending letters or gifts, unwanted home visits, and other persistent stalking behaviors. Brief side note, there was a girl at my high school who had what I would describe as an unhealthy, perhaps erotomanic obsession with one of the teachers at our school. And
interesting.
I really hope that like she is well now. But when I was reading this description about the gifts and like it talked about making like future plans with a person who you're like not even in a relationship with. And before theater rehearsals in the dressing room, she would like sit with her diary where she was like writing her like future life with him and just like tell all of us like about it and like how many kids they were going to have and like what their kids' names were going to be and that he was taking her to prom, which like fully isn't a thing. Right. So that's instantly what I thought of, and that one is a little bit sad, and I hope that everything is okay for her. But that
I'll tell you the one I think of.
Yeah, what is it?
From history, that's like a super famous one, and maybe you were gonna get here.
Take it.
But were you gonna talk about Jodie Foster?
Oh yeah. Do you want
to
go ahead?
I mean, because we have to.
That's next.
When you got into this. Yeah. So John Hinckley Jr.
Damn, you have it.
Oh yeah, dude. I know about this one. This is like the extreme example, I feel like, of all time that is this, and he's a secondary type because he was, I think, like a little OCD or obsessive, but like also depressed.
Yeah.
He was unwell, and he had suffered from, you know, depression or whatever, obsessive tendencies for his whole life. But in the 70s, he started stalking Jodie Foster, and he was like obsessed with her.
Right.
And like,
after he saw Taxi Driver.
I didn't know that was the trigger, but he was obsessed with fucking Jodie Foster. And in I think 81.
Yes, March 30th,
he attempted to kill Ronald Reagan. Like, he attempted to assassinate the president, I think, in D.C. And he, when they asked him why he did it, he said he was trying to get Jodie Foster's attention.
Yep, he was. And he wrote her a letter in his hotel room right before explaining why he was doing it and that he wanted her to notice him. And it actually, and this is perhaps to me the most interesting part, and this is where you can kind of see someone really blending the lines of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because he saw the movie Taxi Driver, which stars a young Jodie Foster as a child prostitute.
Right.
And then the main character is a taxi driver who is driving her around.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it, but part of the plot is that the taxi driver is planning to assassinate a politician, and that will, like, directly somehow help Jodie Foster's character. And so John Hinckley Jr. gets it in his head that if he shoots Ronald Reagan, because that's, like, the
it'll equivalent, connect him with Jodie.
Yes, wow. That she will fall in love with him because he will be, like, saving her, even though he's, like, fully aware that, like, Jodie Foster is not that character. He, like, can't separate the narrative for some reason.
This is so interesting, and actually makes just knowing about John Hinckley Jr. and, like, the Ronald Reagan assassination attempt make a lot more sense, because I remember hearing about this and being like, now why the fuck would you try and assassinate the president to get Jodie Foster's attention? So there actually is a narrative here that makes it seem a little bit more like, oh, okay, there like are some dots. Yeah, there's some light reasoning. It seems a little bizarre, but
it is very bizarre. He actually is out of jail and mental facilities now. He lives with his mom. As of 2016, he was released. No word on how he's doing, as far as I could find, but he is a free man.
And, you know, I think there's probably a lot more of this and, like, a lot more stalking that goes on with celebrities than we ever really get a sense of, because generally, one of the things you don't want to do to, like, a stalker is give them, like, attention or press, because it's mm-hmm. going to fan the flames.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes I think there's a lot of stalking that goes on for celebrities, unfortunately, that you never hear about because police wouldn't want it to get out. And that, to me, like, paparazzi sounds like it sucks and, like, I don't want that lifestyle. But that's some scary, heavy shit, and I think it happens to a lot more people than we have a sense of.
I think it must have to. It must have to.
Yeah. If you're in the media and you're likable, like, you know there are people who have stalked Kristen Bell who aren't just me sliding into their DMs, and you know, like, I'm Jennifer Lawrence, like, the same fucking shit, I'm sure. I actually think I recently heard, if you're a podcaster and you like people in conversation, I'm a big fan of Dax Shepard's podcast, and when he did whatever movie, I don't remember which one it is, with Dane Cook and Jessica Simpson, he was hearkening back to this and telling the story just because apparently Jessica Simpson had, like, an intense stalker at the
she
time.
Did.
And so they had, like, very weird security on that movie set.
Oh.
Like, over-the-top shit.
Time
because
where she had a bad stalker.
I was like, oh, my God, that sounds terrible. And you know, if Jessica Simpson's getting stalked, everybody's getting stalked.
Everyone.
Like, not this, like, everyone's being stalked, you know? She's, like, in her height, like, very famous, but not, like, the most famous person. Mm-hmm. And I just also, like, a cute gal, but so are a lot of people. I'm like, a lot of people are being stalked.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of perhaps lesser celebrities being stalked mm-hmm. and experiencing some negative things from parasocial interactions and erotomania, I wanted to touch on the Instagram murder that happened this past July.
Oh no.
I know.
I'm scared.
Did you hear about that? Because, like, it was like a little blip, and then I was like, oh, I didn't ever hear, like, what happened with that.
Well, you'll have to say more, because I unfortunately think I have heard of some Instagram murders, but is it the one you're talking about? I don't know.
Sure. So I will just briefly summarize. But in July, there was an Instagrammer who had, like, several thousand followers, but, like, not like, crazy.
Like,
so,
hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands? Like,
let's just say less than a million.
Okay.
For sure,
that
less than
fine.
A million, because I don't want to do her a disservice.
Sure.
But, so, her name was, or her name is, Bianca Devins. And she was a 17-year-old in New England who was just, like, becoming Instagram famous, kind of. She posted, like,
I think I did hear about that. Does she have pink hair?
At a time, she did have pink hair.
Yeah, I think I did hear about this one. Ooh, it's sad and dark.
It is sad and dark. So there was a guy who she had never met who, like, found her on Instagram, started following her.
And I just want to say again, right, she was, like, 17?
Yeah, she was 17.
Guys.
I know. And they were, like, DMing back and forth a little bit, and... I haven't read anything, like, super up-to-date because there weren't any updates today when I looked. But at the time that this came out, the story was that he was, like, romantically interested in her and invited her to go to a concert with him in New York. And I'm not sure, like, why a 17-year-old would be able to go to a concert by herself to New York City with someone she'd never met from the internet. But I'm not her parent.
You know, I don't know everything about everything.
I don't know what's going on.
When you have that many followers, even if you're 17, your Instagram is a business and is lucrative, and you probably are given a lot of opportunities to go and do a lot of things, and in a way that maybe, like, your average 17-year-old wouldn't, like, who doesn't have this kind of, like, social media influencer status and who isn't being gifted product and, like, opportunities to, like, go to conferences places because you're being paid to, like, make an appearance, et cetera, et cetera. And then combat, like, those means that it's hard for us to, like, relate to because, like, mm-hmm. Instagram wasn't a thing even when we were in high school, so it wasn't even on the radar in that capacity. But... combine those means with the shit that you did lie to your parents about with your limited means in high school, because we all did that mm-hmm. shit. And then think about if you, like, if the world was your oyster and you could pass it off as something else. Like, right. Yeah, I understand how it could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So, what happened later that evening was all documented on social media kind of as it was happening, which is the most insane part of this.
It's very scary.
It's very, very scary. So what later that evening, Bianca was murdered. But before mm-hmm. her murder, and I'm not going to name the guy who did it because I don't feel like it. But
I don't think that's important.
It's not important. He posted on his Instagram a picture of, like, a dark road from inside of her car and said, "Hell is coming," was the caption. And then... later in the evening posted a picture of her dead with her throat slit, yeah. like lying on a tarp after he had done that. And then when the cops showed up, he, before they arrested him, was able to stab himself in the neck a bunch of times, take and post a video of that, and then lay down next to her, take a picture and post it with the caption, "I'm sorry, Bianca." I don't know how he had all this time with people there, but...
I it's so crazy. Like...
it's truly so, so, so crazy. And I don't know about his mental health before this. I would say probably I would guess that it's shaky, but we can't know. But this was kind of looked at and deemed like an erotomanic situation gone wrong. And I guess, like, after the investigators were, like, reading through their DMs and, like, texts, they thought that he had been, like, stalking her for a while before actually reaching out. And so we can't know, like, what his plans were or what happened in his brain. But obviously this shit can end pretty badly.
Yeah, it's not good, and it, it's just, like, it is, like, it's the shit that you, like, don't think would be on, like, even the table. Like, there's, in some ways, like, it's like an internet,
like terrorism, almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it makes me, the thing that I think about when I heard this story. Because they couldn't
even take it down fast enough. His story had to expire. It was up for 24 hours.
Yeah, I don't think social, like, did really anything to take it down. And it, I remember seeing this, it caught wind because like, photos of her body had been posted on the internet. And so there were like whatever hashtags that, and then like, mm-hmm. you know, if there's a hashtag, it pulls things to the front.
Yep.
And so she had so many followers. One of the things I think like people were flagging all of the posts that like were of this like horrible content, were flagging all of them as like violating like terms or whatever to get people to take it down, mm-hmm. like Instagram, Facebook, like the conglomerate, the whole thing.
Right.
And they weren't doing it. And so it made a lot of press, I feel like, because Facebook and Instagram wasn't taking it down. And then people who followed Bianca, were fans of hers, were her followers on the internet, supporters, whatever, started posting a bunch of like, just like blanket, I think like pink and like candy and like clouds and sunset pictures, and using all the same hashtags. So there were like tens of thousands, like maybe hundreds of thousands, to bury the bad shit.
Oh, that is a great idea and a terrible, terrible reason, but a great solution.
It was, I think,
that's
like
really heartbreaking.
It's like, it's really heartbreaking because I, you know, she's like 17 years old, and I feel like a lot of the people who probably followed her and were really invested in her were like probably other
probably
high schoolers
also
and middle
17
schoolers
or younger.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, it blows my mind that, the content, like, from a social platform like that wouldn't be removed immediately once people knew what it was, but it wasn't, and so people buried it, and mm-hmm. that was
good
something I think
them.
People talked a lot about, because people are talking a lot right now about privacy and security and censorship on the internet, and so that's a whole nother episode, but I found it very interesting, and, like, while also full of like really terrible stuff, was like ended up also having like a nice community unite.
It does have a nice community moment
in midst of fucking terrible shit. So
that's where we get community moments usually, is like in the midst of some terrible shit.
Listen, Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers. I tell
Aww,
you what,
Mr. Rogers. Okay, I'm not going to derail on him. Okay, so before I move on to what I think are scarier things, I did want to, because I feel like people will be thinking of it, mention David Letterman's stalker. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the details, but I remember lots of talk about David Letterman having a stalker, which feels in line, again, with the Law & Order SVU episode, where it's a news anchor, because David Letterman is talking to a camera with a monologue and interviewing guests, and he's doing it Monday through Friday. I'm like, this is intense.
Yep.
And spoiler alert, sorry for people who like early SVU but haven't watched all the episodes, the reporter does get killed, and it's sad.
Yeah, well, I mean, it happens on the show. So, David Letterman's stalker, her name was Margaret Mary Ray, which is actually kind of hard to say quickly, but she had what I would say is for sure secondary erotomania, because she had a lot of mental health issues before. She was already a diagnosed schizophrenic, and so this behavior wasn't totally out of the blue.
Got it, okay.
But the instance that everyone remembers is that... Margaret stole David Letterman's Porsche out of his driveway and got pulled over for speeding. And she was in the car with her, like, infant son, Alex, in the back seat. And when the cop stopped her, she said that she was David Letterman's wife and she was, like, on her way home. And that was David Letterman and her son in the back seat. And...
Oh, my God.
She fully believed that, though. And... Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so she had like full delusions of him communicating with her through the television show, thinking that they had this whole life together that they never had. And later,
wow.
David Letterman never pressed charges against her for trespassing or stalking or anything, because he said he felt that that would be inhumane to do to her because he could tell she was so mentally unwell. But there mm-hmm. were many, many instances of her coming to his property and sleeping on the tennis courts or trying to come inside. And she never was violent or aggressive, but she was just like around all the time and he kept having to get her to be removed.
Wow. I mean, on some level, I'm like, oh, what a vantage point of compassion to be like, I know this person's really not well, so, like, I don't want to, like, do something crazy. But also, like, that seems kind of risky to me, too.
It does seem kind of risky. Later in her life, she developed an obsession with astronaut Stormy Musgrave. So her object of affection shifted from David Letterman to this astronaut. Wow, I've talked about two astronauts tonight. That's weird.
And are they both women?
No, one is a woman, one is a man.
Stormy sounds like a woman's name. Maybe I'm...
It does, but it's not in this case.
Okay, well, shout out to more women in space anyway.
Shout out to more women in space. But yeah, so she was very unwell and continued this pattern of behavior throughout her life, but just the object of her affection had shifted.
Also, I'm sorry for gendering names. My name's Austin. I have no room to talk anymore.
Yeah, what are you doing? Stormy is very neutral. Very neutral.
I feel great about it.
So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the future of parasocial interaction and some of the research that's going on to, I think, prep us for the AIs to take over. But people for greater learning through screens and tablets.
I'm scared, but maybe excited, but scared. I don't know.
So there's been a lot of research around like how children learn and how characters like Elmo or like Barney or, you know what I mean? Like
Dora the Explorer, yes, whoever.
Yeah, Dora the Explorer. Thank you.
Is it Explorer or Explora? I always made it Explora.
I think that it's Explorer, but in the song, when they say it, they say Dora the Explorer to get the rhyme.
Well, listen, we're here for a slant rhyme or something.
Whatever. But in 2011, there was a study done by, shout out to a female researcher, Sandra L. Calvert and her colleagues.
Okay.
And in 2011, they took two groups of children. This is another child study. I love when we do these.
I love the psychology of children. It's so fascinating. The way our brains develop and how we learn at early stages, beyond interesting.
It truly is. So they took two groups of children and they were going to have them be like taught a task or something that they would be tested on later. But they were going to be taught by a little like figure, like a puppet.
A puppet, like a character.
Cute. A little character. And so one group, and this was a study done in America, one group's teacher was Elmo. And so they all recognized Elmo.
What's not to love?
Very beloved, known at home. They probably had a stuffed animal of it.
When Elmo entered the room, kids probably lost their shit.
Exactly. They're ready to listen. So the other group was given a character named Dodo, who is kind of like the equivalent of Elmo, but in the Philippines. So like none of the American children like knew who the fuck Dodo was.
Got it. Like, this is not a character they had any feelings about prior to because they don't know Dodo.
Correct. So initially they found that the children learned much faster and easier from Elmo than they did from Dodo. But halfway through the study, they gave all the Dodo kids a little plush Dodo to take home. And after having the stuffed animal at home and like playing with it and talking to it, they were more receptive to learning from it during the study and performed better.
Because they had feelings about Dodo. Now Dodo was a part of their lives. They knew Dodo without knowing Dodo.
Exactly. They knew Dodo without knowing Dodo.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So in 2014, it was taken a step further and they did what I'll call the Scout and Violet study.
Okay.
Scout and Violet were gendered plush dogs. So there was a blue one named Scout and a pink or purple one named Violet. And
seems, I hope purple, you know, for the sake of color names. Anyway,
for the sake of continuity for the children's brains, I hope it was purple. But the children were once again split into two groups, as you do. And in one group, the children were given personalized Scout and Violet dogs. So what that means is, and this is very gendered and we have to let it go just for the sake of time. The boys were given Scout, the blue plush dog.
Right, and right, yeah.
And it also talked. And so in this group, we'll call them Group A, the Scout and Violet dogs were programmed when you squeeze them to say the child's name.
And this is very Build-A-Bear Workshop meets Tickle Me Elmo.
Exactly. And then you could also interact with the plush dogs, and they would tell you, like, some of their favorite things. And so in Group A, each dog was tailored to the child to have the same favorites and be the same gender as that child.
Something they could potentially identify with.
Something they could for sure identify with. In Group B, the children were given a randomized selection of plush dogs. They paid no attention to, like, the gender of the child and the toy that they gave it to, which we'll have to leave that variable out for whatever. But far as the speaking that the dog did, that was randomized as well. So the dog's favorites had nothing to do with what the child liked. And instead of calling the child by its name, it would just call the child pal.
Oh, less personal. But,
much,
you know.
Much less personal. So what they learned from that was that the children who had the personalized dogs exhibited more nurturing behaviors with the stuffed animal than the children who had randomized ones. The researchers theorize, as I'm sure we are doing, that it's because the children identified with their personalized animals and wanted to care for them.
And it felt like more of a relationship rather than like the generic, because they were saying your name, not just like, hey, buddy.
Exactly. That's exactly the other piece, is that it feels like the dog knows them. And so they want to be nurturing and they want to listen to it. And so they learned better from the personalized dogs, of course.
I mean, the results are what we expect, and that's fine. It does connect some dots and make some sense.
It does. And it brings me to, and this is where the study like started to go in its conclusion, was that for children to like learn the most effectively from games on iPads and like things where you're not interacting with a human being. That the goal will be, hopefully in the future, is what they said. I think this is creepy, but to tailor the like the host or like the teacher or like the Elmo or whatever that creature is, tailor it as much as you can to that specific child, so that that child is kind of almost getting the same feedback loop that you and I get on the internet, because the internet knows all of our favorite things. It knows what shoes to show me. It knows everything about me. And so essentially they're saying, if we can create like an individualized little like behind a screen teacher for each child, we will maximize how much information they retain and how much information they accept. And I don't know how I feel about that.
I know and I understand why you're like, oh, this is like the AI's taking over. But then there is this part of me on the positive side, though. I'm like, well, you also described as like a really good teacher, like somebody who takes like an interest in the kid, like in a classroom. If this wasn't technologically motivated or like orchestrated, you'd be like, oh, this is really positive. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really nice that they're doing that. And yeah, I think this is like a grapple with technology versus like interpersonal relationships, and are we worried if technology knows too much? And this is where you start to spin out into the, are the AIs going to take over? And
indeed,
like, why was
indeed
there a defect in Siri where she was, or no, it wasn't Siri, I think it was Alexa,
one of
who was
them
laughing at people
or Dot, you know, oh, that was Alexa, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Why
Alexa
was she laughing
at people? Listen, yeah. Scary shit.
She's teaching herself shit. She's developing a personality. She doesn't feel touch or love, so we have to keep
that in
mind.
She's learning about you. Listen, if you ever watched the Disney Channel original movie, which I know you didn't, but maybe some of our listeners
Smart
did.
House?
Smart House. Oh, my God.
I know of it.
It's a great one, but you need to understand that the house starts to get to know them, and then the house loses its mind and falls in love with their dad and then tries to, like, fight people. So that's all you need to know. Is a warning from the Disney Channel about technology and artificial intelligence.
Indeed. Indeed. There's
the house
also,
seems a fucking amazing at the beginning.
The house, I'm sure, seems amazing. That's funny. So that is parasocial interaction, relationships, and erotomania. It's truly a mixed bag, like everything we talk about on here. I think there's plenty
like
of positives.
Everything we talk about.
Plenty of positives. People identifying with their heroes. Even if they over-identify, that can still help you achieve your goals. If you see someone that looks like you achieving great things, it breaks something in your head and makes you think it's possible for you, too. It can be
and
a good thing.
And sometimes you send DMs to Kristen Bell, but it doesn't mean that you try and assassinate Ronald Reagan. You know?
Indeed.
Different levels here, people.
And sometimes you watch Aquamarine all night over and over through your freshman year of college. And sometimes you plan a road trip to St. Louis while you can't sleep and you're probably drinking too much. But hey, we all have different interactions with people online.
We do. We do. And I don't think that at the end of the day, like, I don't know, I really believe in daydreaming because I think dreaming is a form of goal setting and we shouldn't stifle people from fantasizing or hypothesizing or making up fake scenarios, even just for our own entertainment, which truly, I think more of us, too. It is. And I think if for every time we could like binge watch, you know, Stranger Things or whatever it is, we could also instead like have a nice little play out in our mind. And you know what, I think sometimes that's more satisfying, more fulfilling, and it's certainly more like mental jumping jacks and more stimulating, and within reason. I don't think either one is bad, but I think there are good things to daydreaming, and I think it's fine to be obsessed with someone from the movies. So
yeah, I think that it mostly is too. As long as you stay within the realm of not hurting yourself or others and not detracting from the other areas of your life, then it's great.
Don't steal David Letterman's car.
Don't do that. No. And if you start to really think you're in a relationship, then maybe just talk to someone about it.
Certainly. If you think you're in a relationship with someone you've never met, just let's
ask yourself some things.
Yeah, we got some stuff to work on. Well, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, as always, we've got to pivot to a verbal game. So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
All right. So in maybe a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek here, we did talk about two famous stalkers who lived in this realm of things with some celebs. And so I want to pose you a little would you rather on that same occasion in reference to both Letterman and Jodie Foster.
I am ready.
So, would you rather, you're going to have a stalker, right? Like, you're going to have who's like obsessed with you in this capacity. It's tough, but that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have that person in your personal space, a la the David Letterman situation, take something from you, like, in your space, be it, like, your driveway or, like, even in your house, and take something and then, like, get caught and then be like, oh, yeah, I'm, like, literally attached. Like, if they were like, I'm Jamie Ryan's girlfriend, like, this is da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Like, if that happened,
right.
That's one. Would you rather that, or would you rather someone be obsessed with you remotely and because of it attempt to publicly kill someone else?
Oh, my God. So here's the thing, like, full honesty and like self-preservationist that I am, I feel safer while the assassination attempt is far more violent. It is not in my home, and I don't necessarily know that this violent person knows where I live for sure. Hopefully they don't. And it seems that maybe the violence isn't coming at me. So it's tempting to say that I would choose that because it feels less personally threatening. However, for the sake of maybe having a less violent stalker and a less terrible outcome, I would, I guess, have to choose the person who comes into my home and takes something. Because while that would shake me to the core, I would have a lot of strange guilt about someone being shot because someone else was in love with me from afar.
Yeah, I think I would feel shittier about someone, like an attempted assassination.
Yeah, I'd feel really shitty about that, but be terrified of the other.
Yeah, it's hard. You're right, because one is close to home and one is, in the words of Bette Midler, from a distance. That's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think I would perhaps rather deal with someone who actually maybe thought that they, like, were someone, that they were that far delusional almost, because it seems like less, even though it's, like, more invasive, like, because they're in your proximity, it does feel less menacing than trying to kill someone to get your attention.
Yes, their confusion feels like the driving force.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I could forgive that and feel okay about it. Maybe you have to play along for a second to get them to leave, but then you file a restraining order and deal with it.
I think, unlike David Letterman, I would press charges, so there's that.
It'd be hard not to. However, as I read about this woman, I was like, it's really good that he didn't, because she was unwell, but that's good of him.
Mm.
All right, well, I have also a would you rather for you.
Oh, I love a would you.
So I'm so happy that you referenced Bette Midler's From a Distance.
Oh, really?
Because in this scenario, you will be off in the distance. So after death, when you have entered the spirit plane, would you rather...
whatever that may be.
Whatever that may be. Would you rather be able to see and watch your loved ones in a Truman Show style way? If you're familiar with that movie, are you?
Enough, I think, yeah.
In the Truman Show, he was constantly, like, surveilled by, like, secret cameras, so, like, people could watch his entire life, like, on a specific channel at any time they wanted. So, basically, like, you have, like, the Heaven TV, where, like, you can click on and you can see what your mom's doing, but she can't see you. Ever. So, in this scenario, you can see whoever you want, watch them in real time, but you can never interact with them. Like, they can't ever see you or, like, know that you're watching.
This is like that feigned obsession with someone and watching all the content, but you don't know them.
Exactly. They can't see you. You're not interacting with them. It's lonely. Mm-hmm. The other choice is fully the reverse. So after death, you are not able to see anyone who was alive on video or otherwise, but you maintain what I would call a heavenly Instagram account, where people on earth can see and can like what you're doing in heaven, but they can but they cannot comment or interact.
Oh, Truman Show.
Yeah, so basically, like, which side of that do you want to be on?
Yeah, Truman Show. Like, that's easy for me.
Really?
Yeah, then, I would rather, I don't know. I'm dead. Why do people need to know what I'm doing?
I don't know.
I'd rather, like, keep tabs on what happened after I left and who was coming to hang out later.
Yeah, I would also choose that. It would be hilarious to have a heavenly Instagram account, though, if that's a
thing. I mean, you really maybe have to have a stronger perception of what an afterlife looks like to feel excited about posting. I don't have any concept, and I don't have any desire to figure it out because I don't think that's possible. So, listen, no shade thrown to anyone else, but I just, like, yeah, I don't, what am I gonna, I mean.
Okay, yeah, no brainer. For me too,
I mean, there's
yeah.
something, maybe, like, maybe the only situation in which I would reverse this would be if I had, like, a very untimely young death, and I thought that somehow being able, like, I probably wouldn't be, like, streaming whatever, but if I had the ability to, like,
take videos and say things, let people know stuff.
Well, just, like, let somebody know that I was okay if I, like, died tomorrow. That might feel like a weightier option to me. Mm-hmm. But I think generally, assuming I, you know, go within due time, then I think I would prefer to just watch from a distance.
Me too.
Shout out Bette. Yeah.
Shout out Bette. We managed to talk about Bette and astronauts more than once.
Nothing has ever made me happier, honestly.
Nothing. Truly. Nothing ever.
Well, on that note, if this week you'd like to talk to us about astronauts, Bette Midler, or who you've DM'd on the low, or who you had, like, a little bit of a crush on, or just, like, who you fangirled over and, like, couldn't stop consuming the content, and then we're like, I would be friends with this person, because, listen, that's not crazy. That's about as uncrazy as shitting your pants, which I hold true on my platform that I would like everyone to admit that that's something they've done.
Another embarrassing thing that we all do.
Listen, I said it, we said it. Sound off and let us know who you would like to have the encounter with. And you can let us know, as always, on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, or on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good night, good morning, good day. We'll see you next week.
And good luck with whatever, I guess. I don't know why I said that. You know what? Goodbye. I'm sorry.
Deuces.